CJSF 90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.
Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. It is Gnome City, and today we're talking about Egypt and art in Egypt with Liza.
Hello.
Hello. We are broadcasting from the SFU Burnaby campus, which is also known as the unceded Musqueam, Squamish, Kwikutlam, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. And yeah, but we're not going to get straight into Egyptian talk yet. I think because we were talking about something I feel is equally important, which is the use of saying bruh. And I've actually talked about this on the radio before about how I really want to stop saying it. But I feel like it's just so, like, you can say so much by just saying bruh, you know? And it's like, it feels like very cathartic to say. But then Liza raised a really horrifying point that I hadn't realized before.
My dad said that saying bruh sounds like you're barking. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I'm like really scared of that.
Why are you scared of that?
Because I just don't want to be barking all the time. And I feel like maybe like I could be more eloquent. I could say, I'm very frustrated right now, instead of bruh.
Yeah, bruh means too much right now, I feel. Yeah.
What does it mean to you?
Everything. Yeah. Bruh is life. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's like everything. Everything I want to say. I'm frustrated. Yeah. Bruh.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't even say it properly anymore. I say it like an exhale. I say like, bruh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, and I feel like just saying it, like, I need it to end a sentence sometimes when I'm talking to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if I'm, like, feeling awkward and don't know what I'm saying. Like, I'll just end it with a bruh, and then everything's fine.
My English is fading, yeah.
Yeah, literally. Like, my words are going away. Yeah. It's all just going to be bruh at some point. This is, like, what George Orwell warned about in 1984.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, there's no more words. There's no good or bad.
And we're going to be speaking in such short sentences.
Yeah. There'll be no more nuance.
Yeah.
Just bruh. Okay, that's like our intro segment. Now we can talk about Egypt.
Okay.
Egypt, bruh.
What do you want to say, bruh?
Wait, I guess first, maybe you can like situate us. Like I have questions for later, but like first, like what's like the years that this is happening and like the art that we're going to talk about?
Honestly, the whole like civilization of Egypt started like 8,000, I think a little bit over 8,000 years ago. No, it was actually 8,000 BCE. So that was like 10,000 years ago. This is a really old civilization. And they went through so much change because first they were very similar to the Byzantine Empire in terms of the art and stuff. And then they just kind of evolved into their own style. And there was always overlaps in terms of the art surrounding the ancient civilizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the transition between.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what was the Byzantine art style like?
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, that's like beyond.
It's so hard to explain. You need to like look at it. But it was mostly the same materials and kind of the context of painting important figures.
Mm-hmm.
Gods and, you know, emperors and, well, government.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so what
people
was...
who control your life.
Yeah. Well, so what was, like, the purpose of art at this time for Egyptians?
It's documenting. They were documenting the government, the daily life, the important figures, gods. They were showing stories with the paintings and carvings and sculptures. Yeah. Oh, there was a really great sculpture I like. Most sculptures weren't freestanding in Egypt. They were always stuck to the wall. So you would only see it from the front. You can't see it from the back because the back is attached to a wall. But there was this, there's multiple carvings of couples, and they're like pretty big carvings. They're like 5 meters tall or something. And it was just like couples holding hands, and it was usually the government who does this. Like the couple would be the government, a princess, or some sort of pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
But they always did this, and I think it's really cute. Yeah. But the Egyptian art... Oh, they used paint also on their...
like on the sculptures?
On the sculptures, yes. They were painted, but some of it... Well, most of it washed off. Some of it is still preserved. But most of it washed off, and they had a standard in Egypt where women would be painted to be paler than the man.
Hmm.
So it's just kind of strange, but...
Yeah, like ancient colorism.
Ancient colorisms, yeah. Ugh. They had that. But I guess it was the context that the woman would be inside the palace all the time.
Oh, so
but
it's
at
like
the same time, it's like the pharaoh, like you're also inside the palace, dude. You're not working construction jobs in the sun or something, building your own pyramid. Come on.
That's interesting, though, that like skin color that time, it's like a form of like luxury to have lighter skin because you're not getting a tan. Like you're not going
you're not
out,
working outside.
You're not working. That's really
I think,
interesting.
Some East Asian cultures still have that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's not like they had that, but they still kind of do. There's just a lot of, like... I mean, it also is beauty because the sun ruins your skin, so they would use a lot of sun protection, visors. Some... In East Asia right now, I see this trend where we, like, women wear full-on, like, ski masks almost to protect themselves entirely from the sun. So it's anti-aging, but it's also the form of, like, pale skin means beauty. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't fully agree with that.
Yeah.
It's funny because in Western, they like getting tan.
Yeah, everyone gets
that
tan,
means you
tanning
have,
bed.
That means you have, like, the luxury of going on vacation and getting a tan. See? That's the difference.
Yeah, totally. Of, like, being lazy and just, like, because you have to, like, lay in the sun for so long to get a tan.
Right.
And there's, like, spray tan, too. People get paid for it.
And the Brits are obsessed with that.
Really?
Maybe because there's not a lot of sun in the UK, so they liked getting tan.
Yeah, I could see that.
I like how we just transitioned from ancient Egypt.
This is, it's all connected.
The Brits are connected to Egypt because they looted all of it. There you go. And then they had to enforce a law that the newer found Egyptian artifacts cannot be taken out of the country. Mm. So the Egyptian Museum right now is full of ancient Egyptian artifacts, and I really want to go there so bad.
Yeah. Has anything been, like, returned to Egypt?
I don't think so, no.
Dude, that's messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happens.
Well, anyways, back to Egypt that we're talking about, like, Egypt 10,000 years ago.
I don't think my mic is set up properly. Help. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound beautiful.
Okay, thank you.
So, who were the people who were making art?
There were painters and scribes and artists. So,
yeah, and it was
they were,
like,
hired. I'm not sure if they had apprentices. We forgot to research that. I totally that missed my mind. I forgot if there was apprenticeships or not. But the painters, when they served the government, when they served a pharaoh, anybody, they devoted themselves for the rest of their life to that person. And when the pharaoh would die, they would have to get executed. Carried into the afterlife of the pharaoh too, so they could continue illustrating them there.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, illustrating them in the afterlife. Yeah. And you said, like, they were in the same, like, tomb or something as well, right? Or how is this?
Yeah, there's levels to the tomb.
Oh, okay.
They all kind of vary, but usually the slaves, servants, and other people would be buried on the level down from the pharaoh. Mm. The pharaoh had his separate chamber with the family, usually. I don't know, some of them had families in different chambers, but usually the pharaoh and the family would be in the same chamber, and it would be decorated. The walls of the whole tomb would be decorated and painted of scenes from the life of the deceased, and there's, like, carvings, statues, artifacts, belongings, jewelry, anything that was valuable and that was wanted to be carried into the afterlife of the person. Mm-hmm. So they could continue their life the way it was.
Wait, should we talk about that guy who, like, was taken out of his tomb?
I forgot his name.
That's okay, we can talk about him.
It feels like I'm dissing an ancient pharaoh without knowing his name. Okay, there was this article I read, like, last year when I had this, like, big boom about Egyptology. I have it, like, every 2 years, like, a really big boom. I've had that since, like, childhood. Ever since I found out what a mummy was, I was like, I want to know about this. So I was like, why were they preserving people? Like, that's so cool. And anyway, there was this senator-ish. I'm not sure exactly what he was. He was a form of government, not a pharaoh, but he was maybe, I don't know, maybe he was, like, some sort of, like, lower class king or senator. I'm pretty sure he was just a part of the government system of the time. I forgot what city or village, but when his tomb was discovered in the 1920s, they found that a lot of his artifacts that belonged to him exactly were taken away, raided either by the people of the time, likely because this tomb was not covered for a really long time, so it can't just be regular raiders in the desert or whatever, or, like, people fooling around. But he was carved out from all paintings and sculptures and like everything about him, but they left his family intact, so all the illustrations of him were damaged. And I don't know, it was just so, by their beliefs, when the illustration of the deceased and anything that connects the deceased to what they were, that means that their ha and ka are kind of severed, because that's the things that you take to your afterlife, a representation of you, so the soul can remember who they are. Because when you, like, when they die, it kind of forgets itself. And, like, that's why the tombs are so decorated with pictures of life, is because they can remember who they are when they get guided to the afterlife. And so since they damaged all of it, that means that the soul would be lost and could not be taken to the afterlife. So I guess he was really bad. I don't know what he did. Maybe he exploited a lot of workers, but they just damaged everything about him and left his family intact.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so interesting from a, like, philosophical standpoint, just, like, the idea that, like, your body lets you remember who you are.
It's because you're, like, reset, technically.
Oh, so your soul is just becomes, like, nothing, like, pretty much, like a baby?
Like, when you die, the ka kind of is, you know, severed from the body because it, like, escapes, kind of.
But in the ka is the soul,
the ka,
right?
Is the soul, and the ha is the body, or the divine being. But, so, the ka needs to be reminded of who it is. because that's just the soul. That's just your spirit. It doesn't know exactly who it is.
That's interesting. Because
your body and brain remember who you are.
Wow.
Yeah, they were really smart.
Yeah. Because I feel like a lot of what I see about, like, the different parts of yourself is that, like, your soul is your true self and your body is, like, only temporary.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I feel like I've seen more of, like, the opposite kind of belief than this Egyptian idea.
You know what you just reminded me of? Oh, my goodness. This talk about this, like, breaking of imagery of the government, of that specific government in Roman times and Greek, I think, too. I don't remember exactly where it was, but it was during the classical period of the sculpture. So it was about 1500 BCE. They had just a lot of similar kind of sculptures, and because there was in Greece and Rome, there was an obsession with the canon, with the perfect body. So they had perfect measurements to make the perfect body with muscles and, you know, everything. Anyway, if the person hated someone, they would cut off their nose of the sculpture.
Wow. Why the nose?
Because when you're proud, you point your chin and nose up. So they would cut off the nose so you can't be proud.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. They just hated their pride and stuff. I think it had something to do with, like, fertility and stuff. Oh, they cut off balls of testicles to damage the fertility of the person that they didn't like.
Wait, the testicles of the, like, of the art?
The sculpture, yeah. Mm. They didn't cut off the... That came later. That came in the 16th century Italy.
Wait, with who?
The Christian choir. They had a castrato note, which is when they cut off the little boy's testicles so he would stay prepubescent and could sing in the choir really high up.
I've heard of this. Does that actually work?
Yeah, it did, but then they died at like 30. It was horrible.
Oh, that's really sad.
They were geeking.
Yeah.
Dude, we're talking about cutting off a lot of things right now.
Yeah. Wait, I feel like, should we take a break? I feel...
This is like, really funny. We need to take a break. We yap too much. Yeah. Let's listen to music.
We need to have a giggle break, and then we'll come back once we're giggled out. This song is called End of the Road by Royal Wood. I thought it was just very fun. So, yeah, we got some happy summer tunes today. So enjoy.
It's the end of summer, and I'm like the falling. Sure, I feel I'm dying in the blowing of the breeze. But I pray change is coming. I feel it calling out to me. We'd enjoy.
awesome party thanks to my buddy's beer and joint. Here's the keys, joint.
Yo, I'm not driving. I'm way too stoned. How are you feeling, beer?
Oh, since we had that talk, I'm not driving tonight at all.
What about you, Dave?
You only had a couple of drinks.
And only a couple of puffs.
I don't drink and drive. No way I'm getting behind the wheel when I smoked weed, too.
How are we getting home, then?
Come on, Dave. Take one for the team.
Don't let weed and alcohol influence your decision to drive.
Yeah, I need a ride.
A message from Mad Canada.
True that. You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Gnome City with your host Katie and the guest Lisa talking about Egypt. And I think, yeah, should we talk more about the canon?
Oh, yeah, we should talk about the Egyptian canon.
Oh, yeah. So, and also we were just talking about this before. The canon is like the set of rules, right? Of like how something's like drawn.
Yeah, okay, so the canon is like how they would, you know, it's a set of measurements, how they would draw someone. I think it had like 3,000 like points. Like it would be a grid, and then by that grid, they would measure by the palm size. So when they're drawing or sculpting, carving out, you know, an individual, they would have the palm size that would reflect the whole height of the individual. Sorry, I'm kind of losing my words. Okay, so the palm size equaled 18 palms. So the person would be 18 palms high from the feet to the hairline, because the headdresses were very tall. So, you know, it didn't reflect the whole height of the person. Mm. So it was just to the hairline. And, you know, like, it was really cool. And then there was, dude, my favorite was Nefertiti. She was like this empress. She was great, and her husband was Akhenaten, and Akhenaten decided to break the canon, and he wanted to be depicted in a different art style. I'm not sure, like, I think there's artist names, but I don't remember them. He hired specific artists, and they would change the whole art style. He didn't use the canon, and the sculptures of him, he was feminized. He had an accentuated womb and rounder hips, bigger lips, just a slimmer face and more feminine features. He was bald and he wore the emperor headdress, and so did Nefertiti. She wore the emperor headdress too, and she was also bald. They were twinning.
Wait, is that okay that they were wearing the emperor headdress? Is that like...
Yeah, you can do that. Bro, she's the government. Who cares? She didn't get slammed for that.
Okay, so they were matching.
They were matching, and it was great, and they were breaking the canon, and... Because I feel like at that point it was super repetitive, because it has been going on for 3,000 years, the canon. And he got sick of it. But then after his reign, everything died. Like, they went back to the canon. Oh. It did not last long. And, you know, this reminds me of the Roman Emperor Constantine. When he took Constantinople, before one of the battles, he... heard voices, and he said that, oh, that's like God and the angels. I'm Christian now, by the way, everybody. Mm-hmm. So he came out he, you know, publicly said that he is now a Christian in the Roman Empire. And at the time, it was kind of, Christians were kind of shunned out because everyone believed in the paganism and the gods. And then, yeah, Christianity was seen as more of like the barbarian thing, and barbarians were called the Germans. So that's the difference. Yeah. So not barbarian as in like, you know, like, but as in the Germans, that's what they were called.
Yeah, not like...
They had beef with them. So yeah,
like, just like to clarify, like not like Dungeons and Dragons barbarians where it's like angry people. Like that's just like the name of...
Like that's the
group.
Yeah, kind of. But they were also a little bit that, because they were beefing. They tried to take them and they said nope. But anyway, so... and then Constantine changed the canon of the Roman drawings, because at the time, okay, so they had like the classical art where they would accentuate the youth, the beauty, the muscle, the strength of everybody, you know, depicted like a sportsman or something like that, you know, an Olympian, you know, the god. They would have this like strength and muscle and just like youth on their face, and then sometimes the warriors would be like hella muscular, you know what I mean? But then they started painting, well, sculpting. They did bronze sculptures, and then they did it was just, you know, easier to make, it was lighter, and the Roman emperors and senators, they would be depicted as they are. So truthfully, with wrinkles, and actually some of them kind of added them and accentuated them with the age, because then they started thinking, since the empire started growing so much, not everybody could see what their government looks like. So they had statues everywhere, and kind of, bro, my nose is itchy, I'm crying. Anyway, it's so freaking itchy.
It's okay, anyway, she knows.
It's my makeup, it does this. Anyway, I'm crying, hold on. What was I saying? Oh yeah, the the wrinkles. So they accentuated the wrinkles because when you're older, you're wiser. So then they made the emperors look really old, and yeah, it was like that. But then Constantine, by the Christian art, early Christian art was very simple because you didn't need to see the element of the like the truth and like the whole like glorified classical art of, you know, like Jesus getting crucified. You didn't need to see that. You just need to see the element of Jesus. Like, he's, oh, there he is riding a donkey, or there he is, you know.
What do you mean the element of Jesus?
Like, he would be really simple. Sometimes you would look at a painting or a sculpture and he would be a tiny speck. There's this one, I don't know how to, what the name is, but there's a small church somewhere in Rome, and it was one of the early Christian churches. There's a mosaic of him. He's huge on that one, but he's like the shepherd. And so with the sheep and stuff, but that also reflects the Roman like folklore story with Orpheus being the shepherd.
Wait, what's
like they kind of like rebranded it, huh?
What's that story?
Oh, it's just Orpheus and Eurydice. You know that one?
Oh, is that the
Orpheus was the shepherd?
Wait, so then
by the Roman one, because in the Greek one he wasn't the shepherd.
What the heck?
Yeah, dude, there's like lore. I like they keep rebranding. The Romans kept rebranding everything. But yeah, okay, wait. Dude, I'm getting back to Constantine. Okay. So when they were doing the early Christian art, it was just very simplistic. All you needed to see was, you know, Mary holding a child. It's not in full detail. Mm-hmm. So then Constantine decided to do the same thing. He's like, I'm your emperor, like you just need to know who I am. So right, there's this the victory arch. The triumphal arch in, I want to say Constantinople, but it's not. It's actually Istanbul now. In Turkey. Yeah. Anyway, in Turkey, there's a statue, an arch of the victory that, you know, Constantine took over the city and then named it after himself. And there's just like the illustrations. It's just like tiny Constantine carved into there somewhere leading the army of men, and it's just like there's no detail to that at all. He has like really big eyes because you can't fit them properly on the face, like because he's so small in that one.
But wait, then, why does he need to have eyes if he's so small?
Because he's looking. But then he had colossal statues that were like found recently. Well, not recently, they were found hella long ago, but it's like his knee is the size of a person in that statue. I can't imagine how big it is, and he's like pointing up for some reason. But yeah, it's just there's changes in the canon, like this guy just wanted to be simple.
Yeah, and then did that end up sticking around after him? After Constantine?
It stuck to Christian art, but then around the Renaissance, again, they came back to that classical art and glorification of everything. And it's just like, for example, you know,